This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I am joined by Adam Murray. Adam, we have got no time for the fluff and stuff. We got a lot of matchups to talk about for the first round of the playoffs.
Yep, lots of fluff and nutter.
Nutter? What's nutter?
Fluff and nutter?
No, what is fluff? Is that an East Coast thing?
That's like a marshmallow thing.
No, I've never heard. That's like Big Boy. Like, I've never heard of Big Boy in my life.
Well, that's a burger chain. Fluffernutter is just a marshmallow sandwich.
Mm.
We have fluff and bread.
That sounds like one of those things that the Canadians eat.
No, you have just apparently missed out as a child.
No, I had s'mores. S'mores are good. You heard of s'mores?
Yes.
All right, we got to get off of this. No, we're going to be talking about the first round of the NBA playoffs. You know, the play-in is finally over with. Now we actually have we're down to 16 teams again. Thank God. Adam, are you kind of tired of the play-in, or were you kind of excited by it?
No, I could care less by it.
Really? You don't even care about the results? Like, oh, this one beat this one. Like, you
know, oh, wow, look at that. The Lakers came back. Yeah, no, these are two teams who are fighting for the seventh seed. That no, this is,
there's a reason why they're so close in the rankings, correct?
you know? it's not worth watching.
They're like, can you believe these games are close? I'm like, yeah, I very much so can believe it. I'd be shocked if the one who gets the seven or the eight winds up upsetting the two or the one. That's when things get kind of sideways.
Well, tell that to Dallas last year.
Yeah, I mean, well, remember the Suns kind of had a scare against the Pelicans, you know, but mm-hmm. You never know. You ready to jump into them?
Yeah, let's get into.
Let's talk about the Celtics and the Hawks. That's the two seed in the East against the seven seed. Were you surprised the Hawks kind of like put it together against Miami in the play-in?
It was more Miami just didn't. Miami is just, again, not that dominant.
No. We'll do them in the offseason. You know, it is what it is for Miami. But for the Hawks, it seemed like they were able to put together a good offensive game plan. It wasn't just like this kind of like, let's throw it all together type of style that they would have been doing for the last couple of years with Trae Young. You know, you also started to hear those murmurs about the trade stuff. But that's something that I think a lot of the rival GMs just toss out there. Is like, oh, maybe Trae Young's on the market. Maybe the coach is unhappy with. Like, they're just trying to, like, create buzz because they'd like to have Trae Young on their team. But one way or another, the Hawks are here. They're back in the playoffs for the third year in a row. I don't see a shocking upset here against a Celtic team that was pretty much on top in the Eastern Conference until like the last month or 2 months of the season when the Bucks really made a push in the second half of the season. But the Celtics are, I mean, by all the metrics, they're just way better. I mean, offensively, they're both good, but the Celtics are just way more efficient.
Well, much like you, the Atlanta Hawks are very frustrating. they had a coach, they had instructions, and they decided, well, we don't want to listen to that. So
Nate McMillan, you mean?
Yes, then they got Quinn Snyder to try to salvage things. They, you know, weren't really, don't forget, ownership and management paid a lot of money and a lot of draft capital for DeJounte Murray and to put this roster together and put this tax team together, and to get a seven seed out of it is wholly disappointing. So
yeah, I mean, you can't be a tax team and kind of show this. Like the last time they played, they were, I believe, an 8 seed. They played the 1 seed Miami Heat, and they lost in 5 games where Trae Young was terrible. I'm kind of curious to see what kind of Trae we'll get here. I mean, for the Celtics side, the usual suspects, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Robert Williams III inside, Al Horford as this playoff, like, monster. It's like, you remember playoff Rondo for Rajon Rondo? There's like playoff Horford just all of a sudden comes alive. Derek White off the you know, sometimes he starts, but sometimes he comes off the bench. Malcolm Brogdon is a sixth man. They're just so loaded. Like, they just got a lot of different weapons they can throw at you, specifically from three.
Well, they're built to be in the title of game again this year, having, you know, let themselves down last year. So pretty much everyone's expecting this to be a sweep or a five, and I don't see anything different.
I don't see. Yeah, I was thinking maybe Atlanta will squeeze one out in Atlanta. You know, Capella being there is going to be a big help alongside Okongwu, and DeAndre Hunter might be a good matchup for Jaylen Brown. But I agree. Like, I kind of just smell a sweep here.
All right, Adam, this is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the New York Knicks. I mean, just the way we drew it up.
If we are the storyline, yes, the team that got them versus the team
I remember that was who was the one that was sitting at courtside when Donovan Mitchell and Jalen Brunson were playing each other in the Jazz Mavericks game. Was that William Wesley?
I thought Jalen Brunson was on the sideline watching.
It was Mavericks. Last year, it was Mavericks Jazz, and one of the Knicks top brass was sitting courtside watching.
Oh, was it World Wide West?
It may have been William Wesley. Yeah, World Wide West. Well, anyways, the rumor was in the offseason that the Knicks really wanted to get either Jalen Brunson or Donovan Mitchell or both. And they were able to get Brunson, but they weren't able to get Donovan Mitchell in the trade.
Because they didn't want to offer Cleveland's Hall.
Yeah, they didn't want to give R.J. Barrett is really what happened.
They didn't want to give him Barrett or Quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you didn't want to give him Quickly. I that makes sense to me. I'm not totally down on R.J. Barrett. He averaged 19 points a game, but Quickly, you see what I did there, had become like the sixth man of the year.
So Cleveland and New York. Mm-hmm. Cleveland started off hot, but then they just sort of, I don't want to say got lazy.
No, but there's one thing that's been consistently good for them, and it's first in a rampant scoring league now, and that's defense. They have the best defensive efficiency in the league. So I think that is going to be really helpful for them. Their backcourt, you know, is not much needs to be said. You got Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. Mobley really came along later in the year. He wound up averaging 16 and 9 and a block and a block and a half and a steal. He's playing a lot. He doesn't get a lot of foul trouble. That's the part where I think the Knicks are going to have to go to work. They get to the free throw line a lot. If they can get Jared Allen and Evan Mobley in foul trouble, and they have to start chipping away with like Shetty Osman and Isaac Okoro, and, you know, Danny Green has to get drug out there, who's now playing, that's when I think they might have some trouble. And then Donovan Mitchell does have this tendency to sort of shoot himself into oblivion.
He does, but then you got the Knicks, who just are still slavishly to Tibbs' minute restrictions and just a weird. I mean, the Knicks fans are happy because they overachieved.
It's weird though, because Thibodeau loves his veterans, but you did see a clear like demotion of like Evan Fournier and Derrick Rose, and the whole Cam Reddish experiment that seemed to be wedged in for him. They got rid of that by dumping him to Portland, but they are starting to get some decent play out of Quentin Grimes. A lot of people think Obi Toppin doesn't get, like you were saying about Thibodeau not playing, you know, not going into his bench enough. Like, I don't think Obi Toppin plays enough. You know, I think he relies too much on Mitchell Robinson. Like, Mitchell Robinson's a good center. He can block shots, but he shouldn't be playing like 27 minutes a game. He should probably be playing 25 max, and then you can go with small ball with a couple of other guys, like maybe Toppin, maybe even Isaiah Hartenstein. I think getting Josh Hart midseason helped them out a lot too, because he's a good rebounding forward who's able to, you know, shoot the ball well and play good defense and hustle, and it gives more openings to guys like Brunson. Oh yeah, and they have Julius Randle.
I was gonna say the addition of Josh Hart really turned the season around for them. It's not that they were being bad, but they have been hot ever since the trade deadline.
Yeah, you know, and even though, here's the thing I've noticed about the Knicks, and we'll talk Cavs in a minute. When I feel like when Randle is the top, like the go-to guy, I feel like the Knicks are solid. Not great, but solid. Like, he even had a game where they scored 57 points, but they lost because he didn't do anything else but score. When they have Barrett as the go-to guy, I think they're kind of mediocre to bad. Like, when they have an offense where it's just geared around, like, RJ Barrett getting openings around, like, curls and, like, around mid-range and stuff like that, I don't think it's as effective. When they have a game where they really focus it on Brunson and Quickly and Grimes, that team is hard to beat. Like, that's actually the version of the Knicks that I think is the hardest to match up with, especially for Cleveland with a backcourt as good as theirs.
So, what do you give us a series? It's not going to be a four-game sweep either side.
I think it's going to go six in the minimum. I still like Cleveland because their defense is better. New York can definitely rebound. Rebounding is definitely in their advantage, though. So it's going to really just come down to – I know this sounds stupid, but it's just going to come down to missed shots. Like, if Cleveland's backcourt bricks a ton of shots, then then New York's going to have a chance because they're going to gobble up all the rebounds because they got more size than they do. But Mitchell is a really tough matchup for Jalen Brunson. He's going to be all over him.
So, but is it safe to say this is a must win for New York? They can't just be one and done.
I don't know. That's the narrative out there. I think they got some time to get it right, even if they don't say they don't get it past the first round here and they don't beat Cleveland. Like, I don't see like doom and gloom. Like, for Tom Thibodeau, I could see the pressure mounting for sure. But for the team itself, I don't see that much pressure on them. I feel like I don't want to say they're playing with house money, but I feel like they're in a good place, you know, in terms of their prospects. For Cleveland, I think it's too quick to say that. I think they got a lot of time. All right, Adam, a James Harden led series where we don't think James Harden's gonna shit the bed, or will he? What do you think?
You expect the usual playoff meltdown the perennial meltdown that he always has, and the high usage, and then just,
you know, I mean, I hate to besmirch this man because he's won the scoring title like three times. He's an awesome player. He is. But you know how they have winning time? Well, for James Harden, it's quitting time. And there's just
diminishing returns in the playoffs. But you're going against Brooklyn, who it's just a miracle that they've even willed them their way to here. But they have nobody who can stack up to anybody on Philly. So just as I usually go, tell me how this isn't a four-game sweep.
It's difficult to say that. I mean, I remember in 2019, this was a Nets team that had cap space coming their way, but they had like a promising future because they made the playoffs and they had D'Angelo Russell. They still had Joe Harris and they had Jared Allen, if you remember that guy. And I remember they won the first game, and then the Sixers, this was the version that had Embiid and Jimmy Butler and Tobias and Ben Simmons, and they just destroyed them for the next four games. And I kind of see the same. I actually would be surprised if the Nets won a game. I mean, we could talk a little bit about different things, like Ben Simmons isn't going to play. I mean, that could have been some drama there where Ben Simmons, you know, played in Philly. I know he's had a couple games there, but I mean, are you surprised that Ben Simmons is not going to try to play out his back issues?
No, and who's to say they aren't real issues?
Well, no, I mean, I'm trying to say, will he, are you surprised that he didn't try to gut through it?
No, I'm not surprised he didn't try to gut through it, but the team also wasn't like, we're expecting this from you.
7.6 rebounds, 6 assists, 42 game.
But he also didn't have a role on the team, and they didn't try to make him one. Because, mm-hmm. like, you know, watch old Ben Simmons highlights and watch him be a lockdown defender.
Defensive player. Yep.
You know, having that circus with him, you know, him in that circus, yeah, there's not much you can do.
Yeah.
But
think Philadelphia is there, you know, defensively, I think they're solid, but their offense really turned a new leaf in the regular season. Like, you know, they started out really sluggish, like in like October, you know, when they started the season. Then they just got it cooking. Joel Embiid's going to probably win the league MVP. Tyrese Maxey's been awesome. Even though PJ Tucker's numbers don't look great on paper, he's just one of those glue guys, kind of similar to Josh Hart with the Knicks. Like, he comes in and fills in really nicely. Off the bench, you got Melton, you've got Montrezl Harrell for size, you got Shake Milton, you got Jalen McDaniels. Like, you got people. The only thing that might deep six them is if Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey just really struggle. And
the
they have
to deep six them is if Embiid gets injured, and that's pretty much it. But
injuries happen. Like, I don't want to sit here and say, like, oh yeah, the Joel Embiid injury is going to happen again, because he's had bad luck with that in the playoffs. But, like, you can't predict injuries. Like, you know, when Pascal Siakam, I think, wasn't it Siakam who did that to him, where he messed up his face or his nose?
Yeah,
His orbital bone. Like, it happens. Freak accidents happen, you know. But one day, like, Joel Embiid is going to have the season where it doesn't happen, and he just goes on a tear. You know, and you would like to think it's going to be this one where he wins the league MVP and they had a great year. They are a three seed. They're not the two or the one, which are Boston and Milwaukee, but they weren't that far from the record. You know, let me ask you this. If Philadelphia played the version of the Nets that had Durant and Irving, how excited would you be about this compared to this one?
It would be... You could see both sides wanting to try to will their way to something, but this is just a four-game sweep. It's just it is what it is.
I mean, I understand that too. There's definitely depth for Brooklyn. They have a future. There's going to be some people that you might see that you like have like good performances that you're not normally used to seeing, like Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith and Royce O'Neal and Nick Claxton, who's got a really bright future. But like, it's just one of those situations where it's just too early for Brooklyn to really like put anything together. You can at least just take solace in the fact that you made the playoffs and here's your first round exit. All right, let's talk about this other first round one. The Milwaukee Bucks, the one seed, they have been just absolutely stupid good since the All-Star break.
They, you know, they let Jay Crowder come along very slow. Because he was very rusty. Was one of those, well, how is he going to fit in? This team has their thing. They already do their stuff. But they let him sort of go at his own speed. They didn't really need him, you know, to be a huge force in the beginning. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're just still steamrolling. And Giannis in any other timeline would be the MVP again. But you go against two huge guys in Embiid and Jokic, you're stuck being... You know,
yeah, third. they're changing that in the later years with the criteria, but that's not important. I mean, the thing is, like, defensively, that was really how they were dialing it up to start the season when they were. I mean, I think they were the last undefeated team in the regular season in October. With you know, Brooke Lopez blocking shots, he's a defensive player of the year candidate. I've always made the case Giannis is a DPOY candidate every year. He's such a force. He reminds me of Shaq, and 31 and 11 and 6 assists. Drew Holiday had some really awesome breakout games. And then they bring in Chris Middleton off of injury, and they sort of slid him in as like a point guard audition type of role where they would give Drew Holiday a rest and then they would have Middleton come in and start. And he sort of started picking up steam again, and they would just keep winning games even if they didn't have Holiday, Middleton, Antetokounmpo, and Brooke Lopez at the same time. It just seemed like they just kept trucking along with the wins. It's like, it's almost like the way Mike Budenholzer likes it. He likes having like system offense and system defense. And they were able to just turn great defense into great offense by the second half season. I mean, a one seed losing to an eight is it's not impossible. We've seen it in the past in different years, but it usually has to do with injury or some really weird matchup. The opponent this time is going to be the Miami Heat. I don't really see it this time. I know they're familiar with each other in the playoffs, but the last time they met, it was a rout.
So it is, you know, this Miami Heat team is not the same Heat team we know and
no,
feared.
You know what they remind me of? You remember how the Giants in Major League Baseball were like, they went to the World Series like every other year? Like, that's who the Heat remind me of. Their ceiling is not very high, so they have to recalibrate in the offseason to try to push the
the tax limit or whatever it is that they have to do in order to get extra talent. And then they figure something out and they're able to put it together and make another run. And then teams figure them out the next year, like this year, and they're just kind of back to what they were. And that's kind of where they are with the Heat. Jimmy Butler is always a bad matchup because he gets to the free throw line a lot. He's going to get people in foul trouble. Their bench is okay, but you got Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis averages a double-double, you know?
So simple sweep. Five, maybe.
I mean, I can see five because of Miami. I can see Miami trying to push at home to get one of those wins. But I can see Milwaukee easily being up 3-0. And then it'll be just a death march to elimination. All right, Adam, let's go to the Western Conference. And I want to talk about the one that's kind of the most interesting. It's also going to be on ABC for game one. So clearly the network knows that people are going to be paying attention to this. The Warriors starting on the road to play a three-seeded Sacramento Kings team with the top offense in the league efficiency-wise.
Which I think they're like an hour and a half apart maybe.
Yeah, they're not that far.
They're just all taking their cars. It's not even like really a road trip. You could still sleep in your mansions at the end of it.
There's going to be a lot of energy in Sacramento. I know they're not in Arco anymore. They're in a different arena, but they haven't had a playoff series since 2006. So they're going to be excited.
Yeah, and they're going to be swept out pretty quick, I believe.
Oh, okay. So you think you
have the defending champions who are healthy and they had middled down with all the injuries and whatnot. Now, you know, again, the gritty veteran team knowing, oh yeah, we can turn it on now. We are the defending champions against the, hey, happy-go-lucky kids. What's this playoff thing? We don't right. know what this is.
Here's the thing though. You're looking at it as they're ragtag. Like the Kings put it together all season long. They had some struggles in December, but since January, they've been really, really good. You know, their offense is off the charts. Sabonis was an all-star. Fox was an all-star. Monk was like a super sub off the bench. They match up actually pretty well with the Warriors.
Until Curry or Klay decide they feel like hitting 10 threes, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, Klay's going to be the tough one because if he goes off, you know, they got Harrison Barnes on the Sacramento side. I mean, I know he played in Golden State, but that was long, long ago. But, like, that's one where if Klay goes off, it could be trouble for the Kings. The thing is, they just score in bunches. Like, they were in the second highest scoring game in NBA history against the Clippers this year. And they won that game. Like, they are able to really, like, have an avalanche of points on you. Both teams were, like, in the top three in assists. So, really good ball movement. Turnovers might be kind of a mess, though. Like, the Warriors are still a turnover-prone team. They were a turnover-prone team when they won the championship last year. And also a very fast pace. So, you're going to see just a whole lot of ragtag, weird stuff going on with open threes and just a lot of like sporadic offense at times, but you're going to see a lot of points. Like I would definitely take the over in these games.
Yeah. Take the over and take the Warriors to be over the Kings pretty quickly.
Well, you are very like elementary about it. Like you just don't, you're looking at the stars and you just think at the end of the day, the numbers ain't going to matter in the regular season. It's just going to be Curry taking over games. Is that how you're seeing it?
Yeah.
I actually say the Kings will win in seven. I think it's going to go seven games and the home court will be the big thing because the Warriors are god awful on the road. Their road record is one of the worst in the league. So I think that might be their bugaboo. Okay, let's move on to the Grizzlies and the Lakers. This one, some people think the Lakers are going to be the favorite going in.
Well, there are people who think the Lakers are going to go to the finals.
I don't get that.
Even though it took them overtime to go against the Timberwolves. So, like, a Timberwolves without Rudy Gobert. So, it's one of those, like, yeah, LeBron can only will you so far, but you have, allegedly the defensive player of the year. You have Ja Morant. You have the efficiency of that entire team where one piece disappears and they all, you can't even tell. Mm-hmm. They grew up a lot from last year. They grew up a lot from the midseason with their swagger. Then all of a sudden, we need to take this seriously.
Just like last year, great steals and blocks team. Just a lot of athleticism. Like a lot of people they can throw at you for the Grizzlies side. The Lakers are a lot deeper than they were. I mean, last year they didn't make the play-in at all, like the postseason at all. But the year before that, they did. This version is actually probably a little more athletic. They got a little more depth. You know, you got Rui Hachimura. You got D'Angelo Russell. remember how D'Angelo Russell looked against Ja Morant last year when he was with the Wolves. I kind of wonder if the Lakers and, you know, Darvin Ham, their head coach, they know this, and they're going to kind of, like, basically, like, put him on ice, you know, and say, hey, you know what, we're just going to go with a couple other guards and see how they fare against Morant. It might be a little sloppy, though. Neither shoot well from three. The defensive rebounding is very strong, so there might not be a lot of second-chance points. What I'm saying is that the scoring might be low.
Well, what basically will happen is if Davis gets injured and his, you know, glass body shows up again.
He got injured against Phoenix in 2 years ago.
That's the series right there. So I think Memphis should take it in five or six.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Say because remember, it was an injury that kind of did in Memphis against the Golden State Warriors last year when Ja Morant hurt his knee. Like, can the Grizzlies afford an injury?
Yeah, they've had assorted injuries throughout the entire season this year.
Yeah,
well then they're also without Steven Adams for the
entire season. Well, also being brain dead sometimes, but that doesn't always get in the way of talent, you know. Like, Dylan Brooks talks a lot of trash, but he's a talented player and you can't leave him open, you know. The Lakers, I also believe, even though they had the plan to sort their way through, I think they've kind of been looking at the Grizzlies as a matchup anyway. Like, and I'm not saying that they see the Memphis Grizzlies as, like, a weak top seed. I just think that they knew realistically that there was a good chance they were going to play each other. In this case, like, in matchup-wise, like, I look at the defense, and I just think the Grizzlies are just better across the board. The games are going to be a bit of a slugfest at times. The free throw line is going to be important. That's where the Lakers have an advantage because you got two guys who get to the free throw line a lot in LeBron and Anthony Davis, and even a couple of other people, like even Austin Reeves gets to the free throw line sometimes. If I was like on the spot right now, I'd probably say the Grizzlies are going to win in like six games. Like, I just think that the Lakers just don't have enough juice to knock out the Grizzlies. That's my opinion on that one. What do you think?
I already said Grizzlies in five or six.
Five or six? Like, do you feel pretty good about it, or do you think the Lakers can kind of throw some wrinkles at them?
I mean, in the end, you're left with what the team has, and if it's a slugfest and, you know, you have LeBron on the court for 45 minutes every night, come game five, he'll be kind of worn down. You put some big physicality into Davis.
Yeah.
They're going to wear him down.
It just depends on how much they sack. Like, it feels like with the Lakers, when they start to really, like, body up, that's when they start to actually play well and look good. Like, I don't know how long Davis you've talked about it, and it's a huge narrative. Like, how long can Anthony Davis stay physical against certain teams? And if there are teams with a lot of bodies that could throw at you, like the Grizzlies have with Tillman and Jackson and Brooks, who likes to guard people close, like, it can get a little bit wonky. All right, Adam, I'm really looking forward to this one. It's the Suns and the Clippers. It's a 4-5, so that's obviously one where you're not always sure who's the one that's going to come out victorious. I have a decent feeling who's going to come out of it the winner. Like, how do you feel about it just off the top?
Well, no, Paul George definitely hurts, but I was the one that thought the Clippers could always be the spoiler to Phoenix the whole way through, but everyone's like, nah, this will be Phoenix easily. So I don't quite understand it.
To give mine away just off the top, I like the Suns in this situation. Like, I don't even care about the narrative of, like, Durant versus Kawhi and past matchups. Those were different teams and clubs. I just look at it as who can really, like, who can take advantage of the things that you have to be successful in the playoffs at doing? Offensive rebounds, getting to the free throw line. Like, at the end of the day, I still see, like, the Suns are going to be able to gather a lot of rebounds on a Clippers team that's big but not huge. Like, Ivica Zubac is a big guy, and he gets a lot of rebounds, but he doesn't, like, have a lot of help guys. You mentioned the lack of George. That takes away a guy who lives at the line, so the Suns will have an advantage there with Booker and Durant and Ayton getting free throws whenever they want. At the end of – this is weird, but this is going to be a situation where – the Clippers are going to have to attack Chris Paul and see what he's really got left in the tank.
Pretty much.
Like, I don't know what they're going to do at him because their guard play has been weird too. Like, they've had situations where they've had to play Bones Highland, who they picked up out of the scrap heap from the Nuggets. The Nuggets basically dumped him. And I mean, I'm trying to remember the other ones. Like, haven't they played Eric Gordon a little bit down the stretch at the guard, at the point guard spot?
Yeah, they've been, you know, getting these fresh bodies because Bones and Eric Gordon sort of just, you know, wasting away on the bench in their respective teams. And Bones, you know, due to his attitude, and Eric Gordon because, well.
Well, long story short, they don't have a point man. You know, even when Reggie Jackson was there, he wasn't an effective point man. That's why they traded him. So it's going to be a team where, you know, the offense never really came together. And their the Clippers' defense is good, okay? Don't get me wrong. But the Suns' defense is actually better in the metrics. So I just feel like if the Suns' top four really start to clamp down on the Clippers, then that's good. Or in the net rating, like in the plus-minus, if they start really blowing away the Clippers' bench guys, I think the Clippers are just going to be in trouble because no matter who you rotate with Kawhi, it's not going to make that much of a difference if Durant's going off, if Booker's going off, if Ayton is going off. What you're going to have to do is get some of those guys in foul trouble, particularly Paul, and then they're going to have to dip into the bench for Phoenix and use like Torrey Craig and Josh Okogie. No disrespect to those players. They're just not – those are guys that you're those are the people you want beating you on the other side.
And in the end, this is sort of Russell Westbrook's last hurrah of I got to do something, as opposed to me just,
you know, beating. His numbers in with the Clippers have not been bad. Like, he's actually been a decent player. He's actually
When he first got there, they went like 0-7. Yeah. They lost like 7, but then they sort of righted the ship. So this is his, I need to be angry. I need to will this team through and be, you know, not just a stat goblin and, you know.
It's weird. So. It's weird, too, because, I mean, the Phoenix team that beat the Clippers in the 21 West Finals was different. But remember, they had Paul George, who had a good series, but no Kawhi. This time, there's Kawhi and no Paul George. So I kind of like this version more. The problem is, like, I feel like the Suns' ceiling is a lot higher. And if Durant just stays healthy and if Booker goes off, I think they're going to be okay. It wouldn't be a shock if the Clippers won the series. I just feel like the Suns are going to win this in like 5 or 6 games. Like, how do you feel about it?
I would say either Suns in 5 or Clippers in 7. Either the Suns break them early and that's the end of it, or the Clippers drag them out to the end.
Right. That's how I think the Clippers are going to have to do it too. I mean, do you think there's a possibility they could get George back for the back half of the series if it goes long?
I doesn't sound promising, but who knows?
And then Norman Powell coming off the bench, that could be an advantage for the Clips too, because I know that they have some people on the bench for the Suns, but not on the level of Powell scoring. So we'll see what happens there. It's just, I feel like the plus minus and the ability to just go boom on you like the Suns do with Ayton and Durant and Booker and Paul, for that matter. Like, I think that's going to be a little too much for the Clippers to take. Yeah, and then the one seed here, the Denver Nuggets. Are you surprised the Nuggets, with a fully healthy squad, wound up having the best record in the Western Conference in the regular season?
No, because they were highly efficient and sort of stayed that way, and everyone was bunched together, so they kind of knocked each other out.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a cannibalizing situation in the West, for sure. I was excited about how the West standings sort of, like, it was very fluid, where you had these teams that never really had a lot of success for quite a while, and that sort of all came together, like the, you know, the Grizzlies the last couple of years, of course, but then the Kings this year were a surprise. The Nuggets finally put it together. The Nuggets are weird because, remember, they dipped into the tax this year after they decided to, you know, re-sign Michael Porter Jr. to that big deal, and then they gave the Supermax to Nikola Jokic, which was deserved. But they knew, like, the ownership knew, the fan base knew, the people who put together the team knew, if they have Jamal Murray healthy, they have Michael Porter Jr. healthy, they have a decent bench around them with like KCP and Bruce Brown and Aaron Gordon, that they're going to have a team that's going to do some damage. Now we need to see if they can do damage in the catbird seat in the West. The opponent this time is going to be the Minnesota Timberwolves. I know the Wolves had like ambition going to the season because of the Gobert thing. I'm going to be honest. I don't even know how much Gobert is even going to play. You know, he's a bad matchup for Jokic.
It's one of those Denver sort of backed into the playoffs, and there's no better luck to have a dumpster fire team who's imploding in your first round matchup. I mean, Towns is healthy, so we can do something. It's just the problem is that team is so dysfunctional now, and Denver knows it. So it's sort of just like sharks with blood in the water, and
the thing
they should pounce all over them.
Now, Towns can go off statistically. He's got that talent to do so. The one thing that Towns has to be careful with, because their defense isn't bad, talking about the Wolves, is that if he backs off and sags too much on Aaron Gordon, Aaron Gordon actually has good court vision. He can actually get people involved. He's not as much of like this guy who just like gets the ball and he just goes to the rim. He's actually a fairly passive player. That's why I think he fits well on this Denver team compared to when he was asked to do too much in Orlando. We already mentioned Jokic and the fact that he might wind up matching up with, you know, Gobert. No Jaden McDaniels, of course. That's going to hurt them too. And then you got on the guard side, you know, Mike Conley has actually played pretty well for the Wolves, but then you got Jamal Murray. Some people don't think Murray is that good. I think Murray's a fantastic fit with Jokic when they do that pick and roll type of game.
So four, five, four.
I can actually see five here. I wouldn't be shocked if it was a sweep. The thing with the Nuggets is they seem embattled in the playoffs every now and then, even when they're supposed to win, it seems like a struggle sometimes. So I'll just go ahead and say five games and that the Wolves, give them a little bit of trouble. I maybe six, but I doubt it. You know, it would have to take some really weird lapse, like the defensive problems that the Nuggets had down the stretch, because their defense for about a month there was really, really bad until they picked it up again. So that would be the only chance the Wolves have, is if the Nuggets defense just falls asleep.
And any final thoughts on the playoffs? I know you're excited for them.
I thought the play-in was interesting. Like, it was the first one where there was volatility, where it's like, oh yeah, here's the seven. Oh yeah, here's that. Like, that was one where the playing people were close together. The playoffs, I feel more excited about the Western Conference playoffs, because it feels like there's some wiggle room there. Like, the Warriors are the sixth seed, but a lot of people think that they can easily upset the Kings, because the Kings haven't been there before, despite having home court. The Lakers are the seven, but they have all that experience. They won a title in 2020. They're playing a Memphis team that's kind of braggadocious. The Nuggets are kind of in a spot that they haven't been in before. So it kind of a little bit of newness in the West. The East, I feel like the real fun begins in the second round.
East will just be, okay, we know the finals will be a good matchup. So
let's I mean, can you see anything? I mean, we already talked about the different predictions, but like, can you see anything other than like Cleveland versus Milwaukee and Boston versus Philadelphia?
Yeah. You know, it'll be Milwaukee versus either Boston or Philly, and that'll be a series people want to see. West, right. you could just give sort of any two teams.
I could see the Warriors playing the Suns. You know, I mean, that would be the second round. But like, let's go after that. Like Warriors, Memphis. I can see it.
Warriors, you know, would not play the Suns, because that would be a.
Yeah, they would.
Phoenix is a four seed, so Phoenix will play Denver.
Oh, crap!
Well, I know, math is hard, isn't it?
I know. Well, one way or another,
this isn't hockey where they reseed after every.
The last two teams play each other, but star power is huge. Star power is still huge. Getting to the free throw line is huge. Turnovers are huge. Like, that's why I think the Kings might be in trouble against the Warriors, because of the fact that they turn the ball over a lot. But the Warriors do too. You know, it's just going to really come down to a lot of things where it's like, oh man, the regular season is a drag. Well, watch the playoffs when these rotations tighten up and all of a sudden they start really focusing in on this one weakness that they find in tape. Or if they know that this guy is injured or hurt and he's not playing his best, and they just start absolutely killing him and they have to pull him out of the lineup. That's when the playoffs get really fun. I'm not saying that players get exposed, but game plans get exposed, if that makes any sense.
It makes some sense, but let's just enjoy it for now. Mm-hmm. And we'll reconvene for the second round.
Yeah, when the really good stuff happens, I guess. But no, like, I think the first round's going to have some fun. I mean, it's hard to predict what's exactly going to happen, because you got freaking eight different matchups. But like, it's going to be interesting.
All right, then. I guess we'll have to wait and see. So for Andrew Reich, I'm Adam Murray. Have a good one.
Take care.